Welcome to Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. As always, I am Joe Galina, and I got my buddy here with me, Scott Chu. What's going on, Scott?
Oh, I'm living the dream today, Joe. I'm absolutely exhausted because I fell asleep on the couch, slept like crap. It's a nice couch, but it's just not a sleeping couch. It's a napping couch. You know what I mean? Good for a nap. You try to sleep on that thing. My back hurts. My neck hurts. But you know what? I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be okay because we get to keep talking about baseball, and it wasn't 80 degrees and humid today. So I'm just going to take the W's where I can get them.
There you go. Yeah, and you talk about warm weather over the weekend. By the way, we're recording this Monday night, the 23rd. It's about 10:30 Eastern time. That's why Scott's tired, but he's going to power through. But it was 90. We had two 90-degree days here in New York City over the weekend there, Scott. And, you know, we've talked about this in the past. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because it seems like every podcast we talk about, you know, baseballs and how far they're traveling and whatnot, but the bats do seem to be coming alive now. You had the Astros with five home runs in a game. You had Josh Rojas with a three home run game. So I just took a look at April numbers versus May. Now, you know, there's still some May left, but we've got enough of it just to make a comparison. And April, you had a 231 batting average, 307 OBP, and a 369 slug. And in May so far, 242 batting average, 309 OBP, and a 391 slug. So that's an 11-point gain on batting average, and slugging is up even more. Slugging is up from 369 to 391 from April to May. So bats are starting to heat up.
Yeah, it's almost like there was this short spring training that was interrupted, and that there was some weird stuff that went on, and that this it's almost like this doesn't happen every year. That doesn't mean the things that we were talking about last month weren't true. It doesn't mean the ball wasn't changed. Those things are still true. I think what we've all been, you know, one of the reasons you haven't seen a lot of the big, you know, stat create or the projection creators do, you haven't seen them make this huge shift in their projections. Why? Because they were waiting for this. They were waiting for adjustments to be made. Part of it is just better weather, better conditions. Some of it is getting more, you know, lined up with the season. Just so many reasons for that. And it's, you know, it's very natural. And again, it's not like those things didn't matter. It's just that April makes everything seem like more. It makes slumps seem like more. It makes hot streaks seem like more. It makes everything seem like more. And this was just another one of those things.
Right. And we're talking about that the weather is heating up. And I talked about 90-degree weather here in New York. And we had basically a snow out on Friday in Denver. But obviously, the warmer weather is on its way. So good stuff. So you were talking about how it's fun just covering baseball. And this has been a fun week there, Scott, because, let's start with the Cardinals. Cardinals called up one of their high-profile prospects that we had talked about, I guess, a couple weeks ago initially, Nolan Gorman, second baseman. His first two games went 5-for-10, just one strikeout in those first two games. And that was an issue that we were worried about, was the, you know, the high strikeout rate that he had in AAA, whether or not it would carry over to the major leagues. And they got some pretty good young players that they called up previously. Juan Yepes, he's still hitting. I think he hit a home run tonight. And Brendan Donovan's still hitting. I think he's 2-for-3 last time I looked. Remember, we're recording this Monday night, the 23rd, at about 10:30 or so. And with Dylan Carlson hitting the IL, looks like he's going to be out for a little while with a hamstring issue. Looks like these three young players could be in line for some regular bats, at least for the short term.
Yeah, and I think for the short term is exactly how I would be looking at particularly Brendan Donovan and Juan Yepes, right? We don't know enough about those two players in particular to make a lot of sweeping conclusions about what we've seen. Despite how good it looks, there's nothing about the stats that tell us that Juan Yepes is a fraud, nor does it tell us that he's the next great first baseman for, you know, or whatever position they feel like putting him in for the Cardinals.
Outfield,
right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wherever, right? Mm-hmm. He's not that either. What he is right now is hot. And eventually he'll be cold for a little bit. What happens after that? That's the money stuff. That gives us a lot about what a player can be going forward. Now, slightly different is Nolan Gorman. Why? Much better track record for Nolan Gorman, right? And with him, you know, hit tool is a little bit of a problem. I'm glad to see he's not striking out right now. Now, mm-hmm. of course, it helps that he's in the middle of this scorching hot lineup with also a bunch of veterans. So when Nolan Gorman gets to hit second with, you know, against the Pirates, and again, this was against the Pirates, not known for their stellar pitching, but, you know, it's against the Pirates. He's in the middle of this hot lineup. He's the rookie. He's the one that they're going to attack, right? Because it's like when he's hitting second, okay, do we want to attack Paul Goldschmidt, who's hitting the ball better than like anybody in baseball, or this rookie that, you know, they say might be good, right? Like that's who you're going to go after. Or like Juan Yepes. Like, yeah, he's been hot, but I didn't know about Juan Yepes until a month ago, right? I didn't know he, so I'm going to attack him. So what I want to see, one, is when Juan Yepes and Brendan Donovan are ones that pitchers start planning for, they get slowed down a little bit. They get attacked in a new way, and then they adjust, hopefully, and we see what happens. Whereas with Nolan Gorman, I just want to, for him, see that the strikeouts don't kill him and that he shows off the power. And he does have two doubles. That's the kind of stuff I want to see, right? Because he's a prospect known for his power. Yeah, the batting average might fluctuate here and there because his hit tool was never great, but he hits for a ton of power. I want to see that power translate at the big league level. He doesn't need to hit a home run in his first three games. Two doubles is plenty for me to say if you're a Nolan Gorman believer. Many people are. Top 100 prospect. Top 50 for some people. If you're a believer, that's enough to probably buy in for now. But if you don't know anything about him, don't start cutting legitimate good players, like, you know, top 100 players, to get this prospect, because the hope for Nolan Gorman is that he can be a top 100 player going forward. Don't cut a guy who already is. Those are the questions I get a lot on Twitter and on Reddit and all those things. And I understand the feeling because they're frustrated, but like, you're like, don't cut a guy who is probably a top 100 player for someone you hope can be a top 100 player. So that's the kind of thing that can be very tempting at this time in the season, because you need to make a move. Don't do that, right? Enjoy that Nolan Gorman had a three-hit game hitting second. Hopefully they keep hitting him second and roll with it. But otherwise, you know, enjoy it. You know, Gorman, you can be a little more patient with. But like, once you want, if Juan Yepes or Brendan Donovan go on a two-week slump, let him go.
I'm going to ask you a crazy question. We've seen Juan Yepes now for a few weeks. And, you know, you're right. He started out like a house of fire, continues to hit, you know, very well. Now, if someone in your league just goes crazy and says, hey, look, you know, I need to get this guy Yepes, I believe in him, and wants to, you know, trade you, you know, a slumping veteran. I'll give you two names. If someone comes to you and says, look, Tyler O'Neill for Juan Yepes. Now, Tyler O'Neill's on the IL, batting 195 with two home runs and three stolen bases. Or Kyle Schwarber, who's batting 200 with 10 home runs and 22 RBI. If some crazy person in your league comes to you and says, hey, look, would you do the trade? Would you?
I love the extreme examples here, because
they are extreme. They are.
But that's why I like them, because there's a reason that you're at that someone can ask, right? I actually had a question in the Reddit AMA we do every Friday. A lot of fun. Someone asked, it was either this week or last week, about do I cut Max Muncy? Right. And my response was like, no. And they knew the answer was no, probably, but I understand why you ask, right? That's fair. You can ask, you can entertain the thought, right? But for Tyler O'Neill, absolutely not. Stop it. Because the upside of Juan Yepes is still not Tyler O'Neill upside, right?
No, I'm saying if someone comes to you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So you take Tyler O'Neill every time.
Okay. All right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because the range of outcomes is like the ceiling for Juan Yepes just doesn't match. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, like maybe in a super, super shallow league where where top 30 outfielders are fringy players. I'm sure there's a league, like an 8-team league like that somewhere. But in every other league, like absolutely not. Now Schwarber, maybe again, in like a 10-team, three outfield league where Schwarber's hot and cold streaks can end up with him on a wire, maybe, right? But only if you're accepting that it's really risky and probably stupid. You can be stupid. You're allowed to be stupid if it's fun, mm-hmm. right? And not breaking your league or something. Right. But in every other league, no, you don't take that risk because the upside isn't enough. Like, even if you're right, if this is that one potential universe where you're right, like, what do you get out of it? You know, if you're the one giving up an O'Neal, you know, what are you getting out of this? Like, in what, like, there's one possible universe out of like a million where you look like a genius for this. And even then, is it going to win your league? Is the difference between Juan Yepes and Tyler O'Neal going to win your league? Absolutely not. In that best case scenario where Juan Yepes outperforms Tyler O'Neal, there's not, you know, not going to happen. But again, you can't fault yourself for thinking about it, but
right, yeah.
Don't use these stats that we're going to talk about today, which I'm excited about, X stats. Mm-hmm. Don't use those stats to justify these crazy questions. Ask the crazy question, Joe. Mm-hmm. Ask it. And then when you go and research, that's when you need to start making sure you've got the objective mind. Right. The passionate mind can take you to the question. Do I want to make this move? Because right. sometimes you find really interesting things. That's where I found out. That's how I got Akil Baddoo. Right. That's where that all came from, was a dream. And then I was patient and saw the stats start to play it out. I was like, oh my God, this is going to work.
Yeah. And then that dream turned to a nightmare. For a little while.
For now.
For now.
But all the stories are like this, right? Yeah, like the night is the darkest before the dawn kind of thing.
There
right?
you go, talking Dark Knight. I love it.
The night is darkest just before the dawn. I promise you, the dawn is coming.
Stay with me. I need this for Akil Baddoo. But anyway, I get so many questions about this, and I felt like I have to explain to everyone that, like, I'm not trying to throw water, like, you know, all over what it is you're trying to be excited about. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to be that wet blanket, but, like, just keep in mind, what is the upside? When you go and look at those projections on FanGraphs, there's a reason those projections aren't probably what's going to happen, but they should give you an idea of what that range of outcomes is that's most likely.
Just use it as a tool as a guide.
And then you can start saying, oh, I think he can be 50% better than that, which is an incredibly aggressive projection.
Mm-hmm.
But even that, at least that gives you a point of comparison to right. start with. Do those kinds of things after you ask the crazy question.
Yeah. See, that crazy question I asked you was based on, you know, a lot of guys and gals that drafted, not a lot, but some guys and gals that drafted Tyler O'Neal. It might have, you know, heard the doubts about O'Neal because he had a lot of strikeouts last year, but you know, they saw the power and the speed, and they're like, I'm drafting him. But then they got, you know, buyer's remorse, and then they see this guy Yepes just going off, and you know, they make this crazy offer, and it is a crazy offer. It's like you said, it's what fantasy baseball is all about, especially leagues that have trades, you know? So, Adley Rutschman is another, top prospect who was called up this past week, by the Orioles. Unfortunately went 0-for-4 tonight against the Yankees. Yankees lost 3 straight now, Scott, first time all season, but anyway, I digress. But he's 2-for-12 on the season. Obviously, top, catching prospect, 282, 391, 488 triple slash in the 3 minor league seasons. We've been talking about him for a long time, and I'm sure everyone's seen that video of when he first got promoted. There's actually 2 videos that I'm talking about. There's one where he actually gets on the field for the first time and just does a spin around just to take a look at the crowd, just to take it all in for the first time. And there's also that video going around where he's called into the manager's office and he's being told that he's getting promoted. But Adley Rutschman, what are your feelings or what's your projections in terms of Adley Rutschman, going forward?
So here's the thing. In a two-catcher league, he was probably drafted and held, right? Those tend to be deeper leagues, 15-teamers. He was probably already drafted and held, right? Like, he wasn't part of some of the waiver bonanza that went on in, like, the NFBC because he's been on a roster the whole time. Mm-hmm. But in the single catcher leagues, he probably shouldn't have been, right? Because catchers don't make that big of a difference. But now that he's here, mm-hmm. I think you love the plate discipline for Adley Rutschman, right? Like, you love that he's not this, like, just hacker, because they have those kinds of players have a really hard time transitioning into the big leagues. I would have loved to have seen maybe him be a little bit hotter in AAA, but I mean, it was only the batting average that was down. He still had a 337 OBP. There's power here. There's power at catcher. I think maybe the best major leaguer comp that I could make that's, like, sort of fair for the near term is, like, a Tyler Stevenson kind of guy. He's right on that borderline of streaming catcher, but because he's Adley Rutschman, to go with him, I think you really had to make that call. You already had to make it, but you had to make that call of, you got to lock him in, because you can't roster two catchers in a single catcher league. You need that bench spot for something else. I guarantee it. There's always a better use than a backup catcher. So that's the one thing that's the only reason I don't have Rutschman on any of my teams. I'd rather just stream the catcher. It's not that I don't believe in Rutschman. It's just that there's so few catchers that I would consider a plug and lock in. There's maybe four, five in the whole league.
Mm-hmm.
And very few of them keep that title for a whole season, right? That's like three or four of them. So Rutschman, I think, can have a big impact, but, like, this is not like a league winner, right? This is like hopefully better than a streamer.
Right.
Which sounds depressing, but so few catchers are above that line.
They really are. Yeah. Greg Gibbons wrote a nice article for Pitcher List about the top 10 prospects to stash right now, and check it out on pitcherlist.com. Anybody that you're stashing right now, a guy that I was able to get for a buck a couple last week, actually, Luis Garcia, second baseman for the Nats. I don't know what the heck they're waiting for. This guy did have some time 2020 and 2021 with the Nationals, 110 mediocre MLB games where he batted 254 over those two seasons. But they got, what, Cesar Hernandez playing second base right now. He's playing a decent second base, but Garcia could play some shortstop, and he's just raking in AAA there, Scott. He's got a 329, 386, 577 slug. He's got 8 home runs and 27 RBI in 36 games. What the heck are the Nats waiting for?
I mean, maybe it's just that, like, he's not super exciting overall. I've never been... I don't want to say I'm not impressed by him, because he's a Major League Baseball player, and that's an impressive thing. Mm. But as far as fantasy concerned, I've never really found him to be very exciting. I've never really found, you know, he doesn't have, like, a big standout tool. Like, what's the upside for him? As someone, you know, you're waiting for him in a deep league, but, like, if he had a full 162 game season of just being the best he can be, what's the comp?
I could see him being a 15-15 guy. You know, batting maybe a 285, 290 average. And who, like, is that? That's...
I mean, that's not bad, but, like, that's the peak, right? Like, and more realistically, you fall short of those targets, and that means in 10 and 12 team leagues, fringy, right? But deeper than that, you start talking about, like, middle infield, there's usefulness there, right? But again, you know, I'm not trying to just, like, bash on the guy. As far as stashing goes, one, in 10 and 12 team leagues, I basically don't. Very rarely would I stash someone. Like, I would consider Spencer Torkelson a stash, because while he's already on the big league roster, like, you're not really starting him. I mean, he's been a little better lately, but you're kind of, like, using a bench spot to hope that he turns it around. That's the level of prospect in a 10 or 12 team league you have to hold on to. Like, one of the top prospects in baseball who is not, like, on the cusp of a starting role, but, like, in a starting job, right? The best prospect I could think of right now to stash that I've been really excited about is Corbin Carroll. But quite frankly, in a 10 or 12 team league, I don't think I would advise that you stash him unless you have like an NA spot or something, because I'm not sure he actually gets called up. Right. Like, yes, he's dominating in AA right now. 169 plate appearances, 694 slug. Right. Like he's been unbelievable in the minor leagues, but it's still, he hasn't been in the minor leagues for very long. And he's just, if he doesn't play, you know, if you add him now and he doesn't start playing until mid-August, like, you probably had a better use for that roster spot, because even when he comes up, you can't guarantee success right away. You don't know what kind of playing time he'll see. You have all those questions and you're not even sure when it's going to happen. I just can't stash in those leagues. Now in deep leagues, like, absolutely, Corbin Carroll's the type who, with that kind of plate discipline, the power he's shown, he can be a real difference maker. But that's the other thing. I'm not stashing prospects just because they're going to like get playing time. Right. Yep. I'm stashing prospects because they are explosive. Like, last season, like the Wander Franco type player.
Right.
But not just someone who, like, I'm not, it's sort of like, do you stash a pitcher just because he might get to play the Rockies on the road in a couple of weeks? Right. Like, that's the kind of impact. Like,
no, if it's just for that, you know, one game.
No. You'll wait. And if someone beats you to the punch, you're like, all right, well, enjoy the dead roster spot till then.
Right.
So that's my mentality. Mm-hmm. That's how I look at a lot of prospects. Not that I don't think they'll be good. It's just, if they'll be good, you don't even know when it'll be.
So I had been stashing Nolan Gorman in a 15 teamer, and thankfully that worked out. Well, we'll see. You know, for the long term, we'll see what happens. But just one other guy I'll just talk about, and I don't roster him in any other places, but I think he might have a shot at getting a call up fairly soon. Vinny Pasquantino, first baseman for the Royals. It doesn't hurt that he's an Italian guy as well, you know. But you got Ryan O'Hearn batting .162. You got Carlos Santana batting .140. Hunter Dozier's played some first base for the Royals and put up some decent numbers. But you look at what Pasquantino has been doing in 40 games, has 40 RBI with 10 home runs, .274 batting average. And in his three minor league seasons, has a .294 batting average. So just somebody to keep him in the back of your mind there. Keep him on your
He's an interesting one. He's been probably one of the hottest players in their entire system of late. But the guy who's on the 40-man roster and who had the hype before the season started was Nick Prado, but he's been not so great of late. So that's going to be sort of, I mean, he's been okay, but that's going to be something I think to keep an eye on. But first, of course, they have to add him to the big league roster, or to the 40-man roster. That's the thing that'll happen first. But once it does, I do think there's some interest there. Otherwise, I think they'd like to call up Nick Prado, but I'm not sure they're quite ready to do that yet. And I guess they're still paying Carlos Santana a lot of money. So they've got to do something. And he gets on base, kind of. Yeah. Man, he makes terrible contact. Just awful.
Well, he used to be an on-base machine, right? You could count on him for a 400 OBP, but that's not the case anymore. But Grayson Rodriguez, pitching side, somebody also to keep in the back in your on your watch list as well, Orioles prospect. So let's talk about some of the news that took place last week. Max Scherzer out 6 to 8 weeks with a strained left oblique. Felt something while he was pitching, took himself right out of the game, which, you know, I mean, he's out 6 to 8 weeks. You know, maybe it could have been worse. I don't know. But obviously, a big blow to the first place Mets. But if they could get back Scherzer and DeGrom for the second half and they pitch the way that they have in the past, like Cy Young Award winners, they've got two top fresh arms for the remainder of the season. So, I mean, you know, you're not dropping these guys, right? Because somebody will scoop them right up if you're rostering them. Hopefully your league has an IL spot, but I don't know, for the reason that I just mentioned, is that maybe somebody that you'd buy on the cheap, maybe, you know, to try to
those are premium DL or IL stashes, mm-hmm. right? Like in leagues that have limited IL spots, you have to sort of prioritize your stashes. And often it's by who might actually come back soonest. The longer you're out, the less I want you. But Eloy Jimenez has been a guy I've brought up who's still on the hitter list despite having a very questionable return time because if someone were to come back and make a big impact, who's on the IL right now, who would it be on the hitting side more than like Eloy Jimenez? Nobody.
He did it last year as soon as he came back, started hitting.
Exactly. Right? So that's a premier. And Max Scherzer, that's a premier stash because you're not going to do the whole, oh, I'll wait to plug him in. You're just going to plug him in. Like, they're not saving his arm, right? Like, right. They're not. I mean, they're worried about his future, but like more like on the retirement side, right? Like that he is trying to use every last muscle he has in his arm and elbow to win a World Series or something. So mm-hmm. also nice is that, do you know how many teams right now in the NL East are above 500?
Probably just the Mets, right?
It is just the Mets. It's yeah. the Mets. Yeah. And it's not that close. The next best record is Atlanta and Philly, and they're 19-22. Mm. Yeah. The Mets are 8 games ahead of everyone else in the division. So, they don't really need to rush him back quite yet. Now, right. The Mets could go all Mets and, have a bunch of that 8-game lead eaten up. But, can they hold on to at least one or two of those games for the next 6 to 8 weeks? Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm.
By accident, quite frankly.
Yeah, they're hitting well as a team, and Bassett's been doing well. Even Walker, Taiwan Walker, when he came back off the IL, has been pitching well. So we'll see. Unfortunately, Tyler McGill is on the IL as well. So Mets just always, their recent past have had such bad luck when it came to injuries to their players. But I was just looking at a few potential replacements. I'll just throw out 3 names, 3 pitchers. I mean, obviously it's not our forte because, we're more of a hitting focus podcast, but hey, we know pitching too. But obviously you go to Nick and Alex for the best analysis for pitching. But what about Martin Perez from the Rangers? Has a 0.65 ERA in his last 6 starts, 3-0 record. Jeffrey Springs for the Rays moved into the Rays starting rotation, and last 3 games that he started, 1.88 ERA, 13 Ks in 14.1 innings. And Justin Steele for the Cubs, man, coming on. You look at his last 4 starts, has 26 strikeouts in 18 innings pitched with a 2.50 ERA. So that's one thing about, you could find pitching on the waiver wire.
Yeah, and here's the other thing is, don't think about the pitcher that you're adding here as your replacement for Max Scherzer. You're looking for your replacement for Max Scherzer this week.
Your bridge.
And that's for this week. Like, that's still a tall order, right? Because not a lot of guys on the wire that you feel like that you would be willing to place a bet is going to strike out double digit folks. Whereas on any given night, you kind of look at Max Scherzer and go, yeah, he looks mean enough. He could do it today. Mm. That's not there. But the one that kind of stood out to me, not because he's overwhelmingly talented, not because he's, some kind of amazing pitcher, but Martin Perez, and it's because he gets the A's, right? And if I can't find, Max Scherzer type player on my roster to plug in, I'll certainly go and, take a gamble on someone playing against the A's. Right. Mm. Who just don't do enough damage to a guy like Perez. Yeah. Perez doesn't miss a huge number of bats or anything, but like, who are you afraid of in that lineup right now? Sean Murphy?
Sheldon Noisy. Yeah.
Like, what's the fear here? Right. Like, actually Sean Murphy has been very good against, left-handed pitchers, but at the same time, it's not the same fear factor. Right. Like, I'll take these guys who go against weak pitching and let them kind of just roll along. upside is low. Keep that in mind, right? This is not a big strikeout pitcher. But if you need innings, you're in a deep league. Like, is, you know, he's going to end the season with like a 4.5 ERA or something. But he's not going to get there this. I'd probably be willing to bet that that's not where he'll be this week against the A's. Probably right. Still hanging around too, right? Like, decent chance for it. So I'll take it. But again, focus on replacing Max Scherzer just one start at a time.
Right.
In anything but the deepest of leagues, because just stream it, you know?
And we'll just stay with pitching for a moment and talk about a couple of closers that have been having some issues. For the Yankees, Aroldis Chapman, five straight appearances in which he's given up a run, Scott. And now the Yankees are saying he's dealing with an Achilles issue. Not sure if they're going to put him on the IL. I have a feeling they will and just backdate it to Sunday's date, the last time that he's pitched. And now the Yankees have an issue with Chad Green, who had been looked at as a potential replacement and a handcuff for Chapman. He's off, is going to be having some TJ surgery, but Clay Holmes has really come out of nowhere. Ever since the Yanks traded for him, got him from the Pirates, he's been phenomenal. Last year was 5-2 with a 1.61 ERA for the Yanks. This season, hasn't given up a run in 19 straight appearances, has a 0.42 ERA, four saves, 0.692 WHIP. I'm sure he's scooped up in a lot of leagues, but if he's sitting on your waiver wire, a guy that really has an opportunity to step into the closer's role if Aroldis Chapman needs to go in the IL.
Yeah, absolutely premier sort of handcuff. If you had Aroldis Chapman, he was probably a guy you wanted to pick up because one, he was doing so well that, you know, he doesn't have elite strikeout numbers, but he does. You know, his ratios were so elite that he might have been worth holding. Obviously, if he becomes a Yankees closer, you plug him right in and he instantly becomes, I don't know, a top 12 closer, yeah. Maybe better, right? The way he's been pitching. It's unreal. It just seems like the Pirates just don't ever seem to know what they have. And when they finally have something good, they send them to the minors like O'Neill Cruz.
Right.
But, you know, what are you going to do? But yeah,
he's batting on the 200, by the way. They ruined him for now. But anyway,
yeah,
hopefully temporarily.
Oh, don't worry, though. He had stuff he needed to work on.
Yeah, defense.
Yeah, but, you know, Clay Holmes, since becoming a Yankee, just in general, he's been so good. So, you know, he has a 1.87 FIP as a Yankee, 49.2 mm-hmm. innings. Just huge fan of this. Even if Chapman doesn't go on the IL, and if that makes up, if he doesn't go on the IL and then goes and gets a save and a bunch of people drop Clay Holmes, go get him immediately.
Yeah.
This is, for me, this is a hold for at least the next few weeks because mm-hmm. either Aroldis Chapman still, ends up, having that Achilles flare up or something like that, or he continues to just steal saves because Aroldis Chapman isn't just dealing with health issues. He's got performance issues. Mm-hmm. So, you've got to hold him. I think you have to hold him until you feel totally confident that Aroldis Chapman is healthy again, because you want those saves. And every time he's not getting you saves, he's getting you wins. He's getting your ratios. He's getting it all. So I'd just probably keep holding on to him. In fact, I'm going to go while you're talking next, whenever that is, I'm going to be seeing if he's available in this particular league I'm using to look up stats. Mm-hmm. So,
all right. Yeah. Grab him. Unfortunately, I mean, it's kind of, easy to see who would take over for Chapman right now. But Rays, first of all, when everyone's healthy in the Rays bullpen, it's tough to determine who the number one guy is there close out games. Sometimes it's Kittredge, who happens to be on the 10-day IL now with a back issue. It's been Brooks Raley part of the season as well. But right now with Kittredge on the IL, I guess it could be Raley. It could be JP Fireisen. I mean, I'm betting on Brooks Raley since he's closed out some games for the Rays so far this season. Unfortunately, though, it's difficult with the way the Rays run their bullpen to determine.
Yeah, so just don't.
Mm.
I mean, that's my advice. Don't bother,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I talked about this quite a bit actually last season. Kittredge was the leader, and he was someone worth rostering in a lot of leagues for you know, the roster. But like, they have so many guys that have pitched well. They have so many that could step into a closer's role without an issue, and that they don't need to. They can just throw out whoever the best particular matchup is that day.
Mix and match for the situation.
They really will. It's so weird that you have what was effectively like this, almost like a four-man committee, lose someone and get more complicated.
Mm.
Right? Like, so I'm not rostering any of them in 10 or 12 team leagues or even 15 teamers unless I'm just begging to have another, you know, pitcher on my roster and there's no streamers available.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I guess I'm just not speculating here because I can't see the Rays even planning how they want to do this. It's going to be in that game, whatever gives them the best chance to win. Right. And that's probably not, you know, based on how they've shown us they want to try to win games, that's probably not a decision they make until that inning starts.
Right, right. Let's see. Talk about a couple of players that went off last week. Kudos to you. The day after we talked about Isak Paredes hit a couple of home runs, and I think he hit another home run later in the season. He's getting some more playing time for the Rays. Is there a hotter player right now than Trevor Story? We spoke about him last week. 6 home runs, 14 RBI, 2 stolen bases last week, batting .360. Let's see who else. How about Cole Calhoun? 5 home runs last season, batting .375 last week, batting .375 on the week. Kudos to you on the Isak call.
Thank you. I love him a lot. Obviously, he's still not an ad in most fantasy leagues, but worth looking at. Another guy who's been really hot, who I never really get that excited about, but who's hitting for power somehow. Gene Segura has been quite hot when he's been on the field for the Phillies, so someone to keep an eye on. This week will be half over by the time you listen to this, but if you listened to me on Monday on the First Pitch podcast, you heard me talk about the Twins having 11 games in 10 days, and that means you probably want Luis Arraez in your lineups. He's going to be sitting at the top, and oh yeah, of those 11 games, all of them are against the Royals and Tigers, right? That's a pretty sweet setup for a hitter, right? Yep. Who's the best pitcher they're going to face is Tarek Skubal. I'm not even kidding around. Like, that is by far the best pitcher they're going to face. So I'm all about it. I absolutely, you know, I like, and of course he's been hitting well. He, since May 8th, which is roughly 2 weeks, right? He has a 20.5% walk rate and a 4.5% strikeout rate. Like, he's just walking like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of fun to watch. So that's someone I'm really looking at who's been hot. It's been good to see Mookie Betts really start heating up again.
But everybody owns him.
Yeah, right. But you know, those were probably the biggest ones. I'm not super excited about Cole Calhoun because he does this, and even when he's hot, he strikes out a ton.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of just shows me he's hot, but he's going to get real cold again soon. Mike Yastrzemski is a little bit more interesting. I'm really liking the plate discipline, and he's been hot these last 2 weeks. So again, he's like a fourth or fifth outfielder type that, you know, when I, you know, as I'm working on the list later tonight, he might sneak into that bottom tier, but at the same time, you know, he's still this very classic, like, he can give you power and counting stats, but he doesn't really, you know, he doesn't steal bases. He's not like this super batting average guy. I mean, he's hitting well right now, obviously, but so he's someone that it's hard to get too excited about until he start, you know, until he really has to sustain success, because a lot of players can do what he does. You know, it's a classic hot streak right now for Hunter Renfro.
Right.
He just does this hot, cold, you know, don't overthink it. I'm trying to think anyone else that I've really been paying attention to. I mean, Brendan Rodgers was hot, but you know, right. This is the perfect time. I tried to talk about this before. I'll keep talking about it whenever I can, but a lot of Rockies are going to be at the top of the best of last 15 days lists, or best of the last 7 days list when you go to sort players. And you know why? Because they've been home a ton, right?
Yep.
And now they start a road trip. You know, the hardest thing that Rockies players have to do is adjust to that ball that doesn't move that they just watched for, you know, I think like two or three straight series, ball that, you know, really stays, you know, doesn't break. And then they have to go to places that have a ball that breaks hard. Mm. So a lot of times they have this hangover after leaving because they have to readjust to how the ball moves, like to the physics of those of us that dwell down on the ground and not up in the sky. Right.
Right.
So it is actually difficult. And it's even little things like breath. It's actually harder for people that go there than, you know, from leaving there, but a lot of things change. So something to keep in mind. I still like CJ Cron, but like Brendan Rodgers is still very fringy to me. Finally, you know, just a couple more that were on my mind. Alec Thomas. Alec Thomas has been, you know, quite good for the Diamondbacks. Like, that's one
day
of the
one. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the reasons I can't really get too excited about Corbin Carroll yet, because it's not like Alec Thomas is, you know, they're not going to kick him out. Mm-hmm. So they kind of need more spots to open up. And then Colton Wong, you know, he hasn't been, you know, the batting average hasn't all been there, but he's stealing bases. He's walking, he's getting on base. This looks like one of like the better years that we see out of Colton Wong, where every once in a while he pops for a bunch of extra stolen bases or home runs. So this looks like it could be one of those. There's not a lot of power in the bat, and the, you know, the expected stats are going to make it look like he's getting obscenely lucky. And to some extent he is, mm-hmm. but also, you know, he makes his own luck. He's a speedy little guy who just, you know, slaps balls right over the infield and puts the ball, you know, puts it where they ain't, except mm-hmm. doesn't do it by hitting it very far.
Right.
And then, you know, he could just end the season as a 10 to 15 home run, 25 stolen base kind of guy.
That's nice. I like that. Okay. And so you mentioned expected stats. Why don't we take a quick break? And you even alluded to it earlier in the podcast. Let's talk about expected stats, what they tell us, if we could use them, if they're predictive, or like you mentioned, if they just tell us more about a player's luck. But we'll talk about that right after this.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right, we're back. Hacks and Jacks, Fantasy Podcast, Joe Galina and Scott Chu. And before we took our quick break, we mentioned that we were going to talk about expected stats. And Scott, so what are expected stats really telling us? I mean, can we use them to be predictive? Or maybe they're more a way to get to the core of the quality of a player's performance, whether it's quality of contact or pitcher's performance, where you eliminate the things that the batter or pitcher really can't control. I mean, you know, when a player is slumping, but his expected stats don't agree, can we say that he's simply been unlucky?
And of course, I can give you the very reassuring answer of probably. Well, let's first talk a little bit about how that sausage is made, right? So expected stats, and we actually talked about this a little earlier in the year. One of the things about expected stats is it basically takes the exit velocity and the launch angle of the ball that was hit. Only those two things. It does not account for direction, like pull versus push versus center. It doesn't really take in, again, anything into account except for launch angle and exit velocity. It takes those two things and looks for all the other hits that were the same or similar to that hit, and then sees the actual results of those hits. It then takes the total batting average of those events and creates then the expected batting average. If you hit a ball on average, if you hit a ball with this speed and this launch angle, you get on base this often. That's expected batting average. Expected slugging is the same basic thing. You hit a ball with this exit velocity and this launch angle. This is the slugging we would expect you to have on average, right? Some people will be better. Some people will be worse. You know, sometimes it goes, you know, sometimes it's a zero because, it, you know, the expected stat might say like, oh yeah, that's got like a point, you know, that's a 0.400, but you know, so it's a, you know, it's a 400 average on that. Well, you see, sometimes it's a zero because it's a liner right to the center fielder. Right. And it's a great contact and it's right to him. So it's, it was really in reality a 0% chance play, right? Expected stats can't take that into account. So a couple quick caveats again, they don't account for directionality, right? They don't account for push versus pull. That means it's always going to give a little, it's always going to think that heavy pull hitters are a bit unlucky, right? It's always going to give them a little extra because, you know, yeah, on average that ground ball at 106 miles an hour has a decent shot of being a hit, but not when it's Joey Gallo pounding another ground ball right into the shift, right? That was a 0% chance play, right? So again, those are the things that expected stats can't take into account. But generally, what they'll really tell you is about quality of contact. It'll tell you how well they're hitting the ball because, again, it's just a derivative of exit velocity and launch angle, right? Those two things make, you know, you don't do it as their total average, but each individual event, that's where it comes from. So it's good for, it is a really good gut check on how much is luck playing a role. What they can't tell you about is he hot or is he, you know, is it talent or is it both? It can't tell you that. That is a little bit of a, you know, that's a gut check. Like right now, you know who's at the top of the expected WOBA leaderboard?
Who's that?
It's Mike Trout, which, you know, which checks out, right? I mean, that's just the way it goes, right? So, I mean, essentially, you know, expected WOBA, you can generally think of as quality of contact. That also starts factoring in strikeouts and walks. So that's the way it works. So it really likes him. And Aaron Judge and Yordan Alvarez, those are the top three. But then what's actually interesting is, you know, the next couple of names, and they're the names that we're all trying to figure out. Is this a hot player or is this like a really good player? Taylor Ward, Jock Peterson, Rowdy Tellez, and Josh Naylor. Right. And the problem is that their presence on this list, even though they're, you know, number 4, 5, 6, 7, their presence here doesn't necessarily mean that they are of this talent level. It just means that for now, they've hit a bunch of balls really hard.
Right.
And not into the ground all the time. Right. That's really what it's telling us. They've made really good contact. But again, the human element can't be captured by X stats. And that's the whole, if you've ever played a sport, sometimes if you're playing baseball, that thing's coming in and it looks the size of like, it looks like a grapefruit, right? Or it looks like a beach ball. You just feel like you can crush that thing no matter how it gets into the zone. Right. And then there's other times where it looks like, you know, they're shooting salt pellets at you. And like, you can't see it. You know, it's a house fly. No matter how much you swing, you never seem to be able to get to it. So there's that human element and the way players break out of that and the way players break out of all those things is more a element of their true talent. XWOBA just tells us about what they've done so far. And that's really the conclusion. They're not predictive. Because they're stats. Stats are always historical, right? Now, if you have a good X, you know, if you have a huge gap between your WOBA and your expected WOBA, or your average and your expected average, at some point, that's going to level out. Expected stats are a much better calculator of that kind of thing than BABIP could ever be, right?
And let me just stop you one quick second, because you mentioned Jock Peterson. So let's take a look at his stats, right? Basically, 239 batting average, 327 expected batting average. You talk about guys that have a real big gap between the two. 500 slug versus an expected 673 slug and a 349 wOBA and a 443 xWOBA. So, I mean, there's no way. Jock Peterson has never been a 300 hitter. So you're right. There's going to be some adjustment there. But the fact is, and you brought up, you know, that wOBA and expected wOBA do show that, you know, a player could be hitting the ball a lot harder. And he's hit 7 home runs in his first 31 games. Last season had 7 in his first 64 games. So I just wanted to back up a little bit about what you said. So sorry for cutting you off.
And it's a great point because the big thing right now that stands out isn't even necessarily the gaps, right? It's his barrel rate. So his barrel rate is usually 10%, like clockwork. The guy's been around a 10% barrel rate his whole career. It's 20% right now. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, that's only 73 batted balls. And the average season for him is somewhere between 300 and 350 batted balls.
Right.
Right. So could this just be a particular hot streak? Still a chance. Right. But at least now, you know, you're not just looking at hard hit rate and being like, oh, yeah, I guess he's different. Oh, his X slug's better. I guess he's different. No, but I want a little more than that. And a little more than that is a double the barrel rate because, again, they're all derivatives of each other. So, you know, whenever you hear this is my biggest, it's not a pet peeve, but I just have to go on the soapbox for a second. A lot of people, what they'll do is they'll get on Twitter and they'll take a little like screen grab of someone's MLB percentile rankings from their StatCast page. And they go, look at all that red. And that's because a bunch of those stats are all derivatives of the same thing, right? If you go to Jock Peterson's StatCast page, you'll see that there are 7 items that are, wow, they're all red because they're all derivatives of exit velocity and launch angle, right? Ooh. Because those things are average exit velocity, max exit velocity, hard hit rate, expected wOBA, extended batting average, expected slugging, and barrel percent. What's a barrel? A barrel is the ideal combination of exit velocity and launch angle. Hard hit, that's just exit velocity. xWOBA, expected batting average, and xLugging, all derivatives of exit velocity and launch angle. All that stuff's the same, right? So like, I don't care. I know they're all red because the two of them are red. All of them are red, right? Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, you see some weird stuff with like, average is red, but like slugging is blue, like an Arias kind of thing, because they're a slap hitter or whatever. But all of them kind of move together. So don't fall for the red, what I call the red trap, the red seduction. Oh, it's all red. Yeah, because like that's just how those stats work. Like those two things will always be high. Mm-hmm. Like you won't see someone have a really high, you know, you can't have someone like, oh yeah, they have a really good slugging, but they don't hit for power. Well, yes, they do. Yeah, they do, right? Because like those two things just are, they go together. So just had to throw that out there. But it's something to keep an eye on. That 20% barrel rate means something. The whiff rate is much, you know, it isn't actually that bad. You know, he actually, you know, he's getting some more sweet spot contact, which is just a matter of launch angle. That means a ball hit in the ideal launch angle. So it all looks legit. He's not getting lucky. So now it's just a matter of, is this a skill change or is this a hot streak?
Mm-hmm. Let's take a look at another player who has some pretty big gaps in their numbers, expected stats and their actual stats. Let's take a look at Nelson Cruz. You could call him up, right? Now you look at his, you know, Nelson Cruz, 41 years old. If you read about his career, known for being really intense with his health and his workouts, always make sure that he gets his 8 hours of sleep, and that's helped him, you know, to maintain his longevity. And you know, but so far this season, lost 3 miles off of average exit velocity, fairly significant drops in barrel rate, hard hit rate, ISO, even his launch angle has dropped fairly significantly. And obviously with the launch angle dropping, not hitting as many fly balls. But on the other hand, when you look at his expected stats, when I looked at his batting average, it was 191, expected batting average 270, his slug 287, expected slug 497, and wOBA 254, and expected wOBA 357. So when you look at these expected stats, they're basically, you know, saying that his quality of contact thus far, you know, puts him you know, that his production should be what it's always been. No,
it tells us that bad luck is playing a role.
Yeah,
is what it tells us. It doesn't tell us that it's the only impact. Mm. Right? Probably doesn't help that he's hitting ground balls 51% of the time. Right? He ain't hitting an infield single. I mean, he does get like one infield hit a year from some weird, horrible happenstance, but that's not a recipe of, you know, it's not a recipe for success. He can't hit that many ground balls and be successful. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's definitely something I'm worried about. I'm also worried about just, you know, it's the lack of power. It's not the batting average, right? And the plate discipline is fine, right? It's just, there's that ball's just not moving the way it used to move. The sound off the bat is not the same that it used to be. And the stat page isn't the same as it used to be. He's just not hitting for any power. So that's really the concern. The expected stats tell me that power, you know, that there is some bad luck, but that bad luck doesn't, you know, how much bad luck could there possibly be to make him go from a 0.92 ISO to something closer to what I expect for him, which is like 250.
Hmm.
Right? Like, he doesn't have 160 points of ISO bad luck. That's not real. Hmm. You can't be that unlucky. So I see that luck is playing a role. Now I want to see what else is going on. And I'm very concerned about all those ground balls. He's, you know, and that's, you know, that's going to sap power immediately. Right? In fact, ground balls are tough because they'll deceive you in a way. They'll give you the Yandy Diaz effect, which is a ground ball that exit velocity is actually measured off the bat, right? But when you hit a ground ball, the first thing that stupid ball does is hits the ground,
right?
And its velocity decreases immensely. So yeah, you hit it real hard, but whenever you hit the ball down, it doesn't matter how hard you hit it, because you really only hit it half that hard at best.
Right.
Right. So if he's hitting ground balls, it's actually probably masking his exit velocity problem, because he might be hitting it, you know, he's hitting so many in the ground that some of those might be hard, like 100 miles an hour, but straight down. So very concerning there. I'm not cutting him or anything, but I may be benching him. He's been a bit better in May with batting average, but still no power. Until the power comes back, I'm not sure I want to start him. We're starting to get to a point where you might have to consider letting him go in like 10 and 12 teamers.
Right. Not too many ground ball home runs, right? Unless, you know, every once in a while, you know, get an inside the park or, you know, something that caroms in the outfield. But so take a look at Gleyber Torres, right? Now, and is he a guy that you might, you know, look at his actual and expected stats and everything that else is that's going on and say, yeah, he might be a decent, you know, buy low. You look at his average, 242 expected batting average, 305 slug and expected slug, 425 and 559 WOBA and expected WOBA, 310 and 381. And, you know, we were talking about, to the start of the season, that offense was down, but his ISO is up to 177 from 107 last season. Average exit velocity up almost 5 miles per hour. Significant gains in hard hit rate this season. Barrel rate's up. K rate is down 20.2 to 16.2. So you look at his actual numbers, and it looks like there might be hope for upside there.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, he's been better this month, you know, hitting like 250, I believe, since May 8th, which again, is about 2 weeks. And he actually had sat for a couple games leading into that. He's had some multiple hit games. He didn't hit any home runs against Baltimore, which was my understanding that that's all he does. But
not anymore. Actually, not anymore.
I will never get over the fact that Gary Sanchez actually had a better season against the Orioles that year. And it was more extreme than Gleyber Torres, but Glaber's the one that got all of the analysts all up in arms, and Gary Sanchez has been equally bad since then, but he never gets crap for it. Anyway,
Glaber might've been single-handedly responsible for getting those fences moved in.
I mean, maybe, but I like the plate discipline that he's showing. I like a lot of the things there, and now I'm seeing that bad luck is also playing a role. Right now, do I think that his true talent is what the X stat says? No. But I do think that, again, there's evidence that he's not just like he's showing signs of life, and there might be more there, even if he doesn't continue improving, because he can just get better luck and the situation improves. So that is someone who you could buy low, especially because someone might think they're selling high because he has been a little better lately and they just might not be believers in Gleyber. Mm-hmm. Right? Like he had those three home runs to start the month. He's been pretty quiet since. They might be ready to move on. They might think they're selling high, mm-hmm. when really you're buying as low as someone would have sold. Because remember, nobody wants to sell hot, or nobody wants to sell low, right? Everybody wants to sell high. So when a player is like not performing well and you can think you can buy low, he's not really for sale. They're like, no. I'll wait for him to do a little better. He's gotten a little better, but then slowed down a little. That's the buying window. If you're into Gleyber Torres, now is the time. He's available and people will think they're getting a good deal, right, even if you fleece him a little.
There you go. Let's try to fleece some of our league mates when it comes to Jesse Winker. Right? Let's take a look at his expected and actual stats, right? Expected and let's take a look at his batting average first, right? 216. Average, 285 expected, slug 304, 427, woba 280 actual, 346 expected. Pretty big drop in power indicators, right? Hard hit rate down significantly from last season, 46.8 to 29.2. Barrel rate down from 11.2 to 4.6. Average exit velocity down almost 4 miles per hour. So we could talk about him getting traded, and I think we did in a previous podcast, from a really good hitter's park to a more of a pitcher's park in Seattle. But when your hard hit rate and your average exit velocity goes down, your power is going to go down. And he also has some weird splits. I don't know if you noticed this, Scott, last season, where he was batting 346 against righties and 177 against lefties. All of a sudden this season, he's hitting lefties at a rate of 283 and righties at 186. So it's kind of strange.
Both of his home runs are against lefties, he actually has against righties. He has two extra base hits in 106 at-bats. Against lefties, he has 7 in 52 plate appearances, 46 at-bats. Hmm. That makes no sense. That's just splits in season are just generally fairly unreliable. But
I guess especially this early too, right?
It is fascinating. But anyway, with Jesse Winker, he has been better this month. But part of that is because he's just been a bit more aggressive, right? The batting average is up in May. The power is better. It's not all there, but it's better. But something really weird has happened. If you look at his overall walk rate, you're like, oh, yeah, it's like 12%. He's taking a ton of walks. Not in the month of May. He only has 4 walks the entire month. To put that in perspective, he had 17 last month, right? Mm-hmm. So he's like almost stopped walking to just start swinging the bat, and it might be working. So I would expect it. Like, I'm sort of curious as to what adjustment comes after this, right? Because there's no way he's going from this really high walk player all of a sudden to this like 4% walk rate player. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if that's him trying to jumpstart the bat. So that's kind of what I'm watching there.
Yeah. All right. So, let's wind this down. There were a couple other players that were on our rundown. Alex Verdugo, his expected stats a lot better than his actual stats. The guy's a career 282 hitter. Let's see some other players. Christian Walker, 10 home runs overall, only batting 201, but expected batting average 277, expected slug 625, actual 458. Yeah.
He's been heating up a lot. So, I mean, that's, again, X stats aren't predictive, but mm-hmm. luck gets better. The only problem is you don't know when. So it looks like his luck is correcting itself a bit. That doesn't mean what he's been recently is his true talent or whatever, but he's getting some luck correction. And, you know, he's the kind of hitter who's got just enough power to where if he gets hot, he's interesting.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Cheap power.
He had a 30 home run season once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tommy Pham, 262 career hitter, modest power and speed, plays in a real good hitter's park. 226 versus 286 actual and expected batting average. Jorge Mateo, useful player because of stolen bases, and he could play a couple different positions. 219 batting average and 269 expected. Any of those guys move the dial for you?
Well, Jorge Mateo is really interesting, but I'll tell you what, I don't give two licks about his expected batting average or slugging. Right?
You care about stolen bases and getting
on base. I care about home runs and stolen bases, and you can hit a lot of home runs without having a high slugging. If you'll remember famously, I've ranted about Rougned Odor hitting 30 home runs and slugging like 396.
Mm.
Right? Like, it's possible. And guys like Jorge Mateo can do that because they strike out, you know, a lot more than they should. They never walk. So they have this tiny slugging compared to, you know, how many home runs they hit. Right. But anyway, he can hit home runs. He can hit doubles and he can steal a whole bunch of bases. So there's some value there. Tommy Pham, you know, while that lineup's hot, he'll at least score runs. So even if as long as he gets on base a little bit, and he is doing that, even if the batting average is low lately, he's still walking enough, I think, to be sort of valuable in that sense. And, you know, finally, you know, like even Jonathan Scope, I watch him quite a bit, and so there's just not enough there. And even when he's good, he's just a power hitting player with second base eligibility, right? Mm-hmm. There's other ones of those that are interesting right now, so no need to hold it. So again, there's some bad luck going on with some of these players. You know, again, particularly interested in Mateo because usually speedy players like this, you know, speed is not accounted for in X stats. So usually players like this are able to beat their X stats to an extent because they're able to outrun balls that normally would have been out for players that are less speedy. So the fact that he's a little under makes me wonder either if he's hitting a ton of grounders, right? You know, pulling a ton of grounders, which are just turning into a lot of outs, you know, right to the shortstop or something, mm-hmm. or if he is just been unlucky, and I can expect maybe even some batting average correction one day, which might be nice. Yeah. But I mean, even that would be 250. He's just never going to hit for a high average, but he's the most interesting, but it's just because he has power and speed.
Right. And just a quick thing, Scope, I think he actually hit a home run tonight. I think he was 2-for-4 last I looked. Remember, we're recording this May 23rd, Monday night. And I think that slams the lid on things for today there, Scott. Next time we get together, Wednesday, June 1st. Great analysis as always from you. And follow my man Scott at If The Chew Fits. Don't forget to follow me at Joe Galina. Follow our podcast at Hacks and Jacks BL. Let us know if there's anything specific that you'd like us to cover. You could subscribe to our podcast wherever you digest your podcast content. Leave us a nice review. And as always, we hope that all of your fantasies become realities. And we'll see you next time.